Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and our mission here at Growing Leaders is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. Now, Tim, we're talking about a really important subject today, and it's one that you requested.
I did, specifically. I feel like over and over and over, I'm finding myself talking to teachers and coaches and educators, administrators, who are just feeling that like they're not getting through to their students.
Yeah.
And I think there's a club for that, isn't there?
Yes, there is. I always say there's a club for that. It's called the human race.
Yeah, that's
you can join it.
Yeah, parents, teachers, et cetera. But Andrew, I thought it would be fun to kick it off. We were kids once, and we were probably the kids that the teachers thought, I'm not getting through to them.
I'm sure I was.
You had some crazy memories. I want you to take time for just one. You told me that. You actually told our staff this at our staff retreat.
Yeah.
Would you mind jumping in? This was a childhood memory from Andrew McPeak that I thought I would maybe die rolling over laughing when he told this story.
Well, so. I think we always think, I hope that we're not judged by our worst moments.
Yes.
This was probably one of mine. But again, I think I was 13 or 14 years old. So that's when a lot of our worst moments were.
Yeah.
So we always used to go over to my friend's house for around his birthday, which was in August. And one of the things that we always used to do, and I think we were 13 or 14, is we would go outside and we'd shoot off fireworks and all that kind of stuff. That's what happens when you grow up in Tennessee.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what
that's
I'm saying?
Right, exactly.
So we shot off some fireworks. We had a bit of fun. And the next morning when we woke up, it was a Saturday morning, his dad comes in and he says, "Hey, boys, there's actually some roadkill on the other side of the street." And we were like, "No way." So we all throw our clothes on and we run out there. And sure enough, there's a deer in the ditch across the street from his house. And it started to get bloated and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so we're boys. The first thing we think to do is let's light some fireworks and throw it at it, you know? So we start throwing fireworks. Nothing's really happening and it's not really that exciting. So we're like, what do we do? What do we do? So somebody got the idea. We're going to take a rope and kind of hook it around the deer's neck and drag it out of the ditch and pull it up farther off the road in this sort of little field with this high grass. And we're able to use two ropes and kind of arrange it to where it looks like it's sitting facing the road with its little legs out in front of it and all that stuff. And
so the dead deer looks like it's alive.
It does look like not only does it look like it's alive, it looks like it's just watching traffic,
you know? Yeah.
And so we left one of the ropes tied around its neck. And my friend's like, "Here's what we do. One of us holds onto the other end of the rope and we hide down in that tall grass.
Yeah.
And when cars come by, we'll just pull on the rope and the deer looks like it sort of cranes its neck and looks at oncoming traffic." So we decide, okay, this is the right thing to do. And I mean, the rest of us hide with a video camera on the other side of the street, you know, in the bushes, you know, watching what happens. And I mean, we confused the heck out of a lot of people that day. If you can imagine driving down the road, there's a deer. You first notice the deer sitting on the side of the road, and then all of a sudden the deer turns its head and looks at you. So we had so many cars that were just slamming on the brakes and what's going on?
Yeah.
And finally, I think it was probably the eighth or ninth car actually slams on his brakes, slides, you know, and everything. He gets out of his car and he goes up to the deer real tenderly.
Yeah.
And we hear him from across the street going, "They got you tied up, do they, girl?" He thought we had tied this deer. So he gets out a pocket knife and he cuts the rope.
Oh,
and my friend jumps up and runs away.
Yeah.
And so, of course, the guy, everything kind of hits him all at once. Like, because he cuts the rope of the deer and the deer just falls over.
And
the kid runs off away and he's like, "I've been duped," you know. So he just gets in his car and runs away. But I still remember that as like,
that's hilarious.
I cannot believe, one, that we thought of that, but two, that we got away with
it. You actually did it.
But this is how kids are, you know.
I can't
imagine what my parents or what my teachers or whoever thought of me in those days.
Yeah, just hoping to God you turn out to be a sane citizen in America.
Yeah.
So one of the things I'd like to talk about today, Andrew, and I'm going to let you host this, but I think we all have watched kids do less than stellar things, kind of bonehead things, and we do wonder, how are they going to turn out? I'm not getting through in my classroom. I'm not getting through at home in the kitchen when I'm talking to my, you know, 12-year-old or 15-year-old or whatever. And what do I do? And today, I really want to talk about not losing heart because of some fundamental things that are happening in their brain during those teenage years.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And it, we all have moments. And here's the reason why this is so important is because as we continue to communicate them to them and we feel like it's just not getting through, what you and I know, and honestly, what all of us would know if we look back on our lives, is we would realize actually they did get through.
Yeah, yeah.
We just didn't recognize
That's exactly right.
And in fact, there's so many moments like when we were kids of little things that we still do from our childhood.
Yep.
I know we were talking about this before we started. Yeah. One thing for me was I watched my dad make breakfast. He made bacon, pancakes, and eggs every single Saturday morning. And our whole family would show up and eat it. Guess what I make on Saturdays?
Same thing.
Same thing. And I think a big reason for that is I think I started to believe that's what is supposed to happen.
That's right. Yeah.
I was soaking things up that maybe I wasn't even paying attention to the fact that I was soaking things
up. So there's stuff that my mom and dad both did, and maybe it's DNA, but I think it was me watching repetition over and over and over. Today, my wife will tell me, I salt my food exactly the way my dad salted his food. Not just the fact that I use salt, I do, but it's the way he, with his finger, a certain way, it's the way, and it's Skip Elmore, my dad.
Yeah.
And she'd go, you're just exactly like your dad. And I think it's just, I watch something over and over and over that he didn't try to train me in. It was just the repetition of that happening. Today, I'm noticing I'm relating to my children exactly the way my mother related to us as children.
Yes.
And yeah, that could be DNA, but I think it's the watching of the pattern. And like you just said about your dad, I just think this is the way
it should be done. Yeah.
So we need to take heart in that something's happening up in the teenage brain that we can take advantage of, even if we don't feel like we're fully engaging that adolescent today.
Well, Tim, as we were talking about this topic beforehand, I remember you brought up a story. You had actually had an experience a few years ago on this subject where you learned this. I'd love for you to share that.
Yeah, so I was on a university campus just a few weeks ago, actually, and I was talking to staff members in the student affairs department. So there were five individuals, I would estimate in their mid-30s. And they were talking about the Habitudes curriculum that we put out. Habitudes are images that form leadership habits and attitudes. And they all said, we met you first when we were in college 15 years ago, when we were 20 years old. Oh, my gosh, sophomores in college. That's amazing. And then they said to me, we still use those Habitudes to this day. Well, that's very flattering for an author to hear
great.
That. So, oh, that's cool, you know. So these principles are still living by. But then the telling moment of the conversation happened when I said, so did you just really enjoy those at the moment, and that's why they stuck? And they all paused and looked at each other because I could tell they were the answer was not, oh, yeah, we love them. They basically acknowledged, well, not really. We just kind of discussed them, and we kind of went through them, but we found they stuck later because our teacher kept going over and over and over. And herein lies the point that everybody knows that's listening, but we forget and we lose heart, that sometimes just the repetition of a pattern of a teaching, of a conversation, of a topic, over and over and over begins to develop the neural pathway, which we'll talk about in a minute, that makes something stick. And here this 35-year-old staff members say, it stuck, even though I didn't thoroughly get goosebumps when I was talking about it the first time in a classroom.
Yeah. That's such a significant reminder because I think it's so easy for us. Because think about the perspective of that teacher leading Habitudes, right?
Yeah.
If you had not been talking to those students, but instead you had been talking to that teacher, here's how the conversation might have gone. Oh, Habitudes, I taught that 15 years ago. I couldn't really get my students to
buy into it,
you know? And lo and behold, they have no idea that 15 years later, their students are still talking about those things. And I think that's exactly why we need to take heart, is because the emotional response from our students in the moment is not necessarily correlate with whether or not we're getting through.
That's good. I'm glad you said that. So every one of us in this conversation, even you listeners, have been in front of students, maybe even our own kids, that would go, they are not getting this. Mm. They're zoned out. They're on their phone. They get earbuds in. In fact, I remember the event that I spoke at this university. When I first walked in, I looked at the audience. I stood off to the side of the auditorium. There were about 1,000 students there. And I mean, they had earbuds in with their eyes shut. They were reading magazines. They were staring down at their smartphone, which had come out not very long ago. And I thought, oh, boy, this is going to be a tough day. And I spoke, and what I discovered later was they lined up to talk to me about my topic. And I would have not have guessed from their faces that they were listening.
Yeah.
So again, this is all meant to hearten the disheartened today that something's happening inside that we need to take heart in. So,
yeah, and in fact, you talk about this, what's happening with students as almost like a file. It's almost like we're putting something away inside of a student's brain that they're going to be able to pull out again later.
So whenever a new topic is brought up, let's say it's relatively new at least, there are filing cabinets that our brain begins to start. When a new topic comes in, we don't know where to file it in an already established filing cabinet. We have a filing cabinet that we start. And so these files are topics in a mental cabinet. Neuroscientists call them neural pathways. Mm. So when something comes up and then it's drilled in over and over and over, a neural pathway is made in our brain. So our brain is made up of cities and roads. And the roads are those neural pathways. So the cities are the major cabinets. But those pathways are being formed. You and I end up talking about many of the same things. We have a way of thinking. We can read each other's mind, can't we? You'll know what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is, thank you for saying a little bit, because mine would be heavy reading.
I was about to say, there's way too much in there
for me to read
it all.
Okay. neuroscientists tell these neural pathways are key, and the key, what makes them work, is repetition. Mm. Not necessarily being the best speaker in the world, although we do advocate for engagement, student engagement. It's the do it over. Get that road built.
Is it healthy to think of it like if you've ever walked on a footpath in the woods, you know that path in the woods is left only because you've sort of traversed it back and forth so many times, and it becomes easier to see the path even in the spring when the growth comes up. You can still see the pathway because you've sort of worn it down.
That's exactly right. The weeds are off to the side, but that place that's been walked on is just dirt.
Yeah, that's great.
So I read a book that was very fascinating. I don't know if you're readers out there that are listening, but the book was called Subliminal. The subtitle was How Your Unconscious Mind Rules Your Behavior. And it was written by a former UC Berkeley professor, Leonard Lodinow, who confirms this fact. He says these neural pathways are very important, and the experiences and the reading that we do get stuffed down inside, and our unconscious mind is doing things that our conscious mind doesn't even know that it's doing. For instance, I mentioned I salt my food the same way my dad salted his food.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I do is because I watch that. I'm now not thinking, I want to salt my food just like dad did.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter.
It's not a conscious thought.
Yeah. This book was fascinating because he talked about how much activity is taking place in our unconscious, or shall we say subconscious mind, Sigmund Freud talked about. So our memory of our particular situation is colored by those neural pathways that were carved out. In other words, the pathways you have in your brain even determine how you remember something, because there's a path, there's a certain road that topic's going to drive down. So a great illustration is he talks about in this book about how people that had been either assaulted, a crime was committed against them, they were assaulted, or theft had happened, a purse was taken or whatever. When they were standing in front of the criminal lineup, these suspects, that, you know, six guys were there and they were picking, even when the police put up all wrong guys, they none of these guys would have been the guy. They said, oh yeah, it was that guy right there. And they were so sure of themselves. Well, their neural pathway, now in this case it's a bad thing, but had chosen a guy because of the way they remembered something. Our memories are colored of last year's family picnic, the ball game, and what actually happened in the seventh inning, you name it. These neural pathways are very, very, very important to our memory.
And sound like they're powerful, too. So in some ways, they take over even when we're not paying attention.
Yeah. So in a fascinating article called How You Know by Paul Graham, he summarizes this idea. This is what he said. Reading and experience train your model of the world. And even if you forget the experience or what you read, its effect on your model of the world persists. Your mind is like a compiled program that you've lost the source of. It works, but you don't know why. So haven't we all found ourselves saying, why do you do that? And the other person says, well, I don't know. Maybe it's because my mom always did it that way. Or your dad always cooked breakfast the way he did on Saturday. We know this is happening. I guess I just want parents, teachers, coaches to remember what you're saying may be getting through and you do not know it.
Even long after you're not physically present with them anymore, your effect on them is left behind.
I lost the source of that behavior but I still behave that way.
Yeah.
And isn't that what we all want? Mm-hmm. I don't care if you remember that I spoke that truth to you in third grade or 12th grade. I just want that to stick in your life. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like going back to that path analogy. If I had walked a path with an adult for many times, and then the adult says, can you find your way? Mm-hmm. You would be able to because you guys had walked that path. Yeah. You had cleared that together. Yeah. So I no longer need the adult to help me get there, but I can follow that.
The path is worn,
So you've talked about not losing heart, the reality of this situation. I wonder, how do we actually do that? Or how does this shape our leadership?
Yeah, well, the first, let me share just a handful of thoughts that are more for the heart than the head, and then I want to talk about a specific takeaway for
our
listeners. Well, the first thing this does to inform our leadership is it encourages me not to lose heart. I know I must have said that 17 times here, but don't lose heart. Don't give up on teaching important concepts to the next generation of kids. Even when it appears they're not getting it, the input is being filed away, just like we've mentioned before. When it's repeated, a neural pathway is likely created.
And it's important to say not lose heart because we know, I mean, we talk about this all the time. Most of the events we do are kickoff events.
Yeah,
everybody's excited at the beginning of something. It's in the middle of the year when it's like, I don't know how things are going, or we've been trying to teach this same thing several times. So I think you can hear don't lose heart as many times as you need to hear it, and I still think it's a helpful message because of the way that life works.
That's right. So number two, this reminds me I must take advantage of early conditioning. I would say the earlier you can get started on very important messages, get started. The younger a student is, the more deeply they will be impressed by good conditioning and habits of thought. And I would just add, during their K-12 years, you and I both know this, we need to double-click on the things that we consider most important, even if we feel like, oh my gosh, they're going to say, I've already said this, but they need to hear it again.
Yeah.
It's not for information, it's for transformation.
We actually say that all the time in our curriculum advice, is we'll have a school call us and say, hey, listen, they learned this back in sixth grade. Are you sure we need to talk about it again in 10th grade? And we'll say, yes, they do.
Absolutely.
Because even if they part of it might seem familiar, one, they've matured, and so hearing it again, they're actually going to be able to go deeper than they did last time. But two, repetition is never a bad idea.
Yep. So the third takeaway for the heart is this teaches me to leverage epiphanies as I communicate. So while you're teaching or parenting kids, choose a topic once in a while at least that could be an epiphany for them. You know what I mean? Those like light bulb moments where, ooh, I just had a thought for the first time, or at least it feels like the first time. A new idea that could change the way they view life. Make it memorable by using images and creative experiences. We teach this all the time, but I think we need a mom or dad listening. Think about the epiphanies that could happen even this weekend if you created a memory and that started a new neural pathway.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think about if I ever hear a student say, huh, I've never thought about it that way before, I know we need to dig down on that moment
right there.
Because I've done something that created an epiphany, and that needs more time, even if it means throwing out some things I might have planned on talking about.
Right.
Because you don't, epiphanies don't come that very often. So when you find one, you really got to dig into
it. So true. They're starting a new filing cabinet
exactly.
on that topic. And then the last takeaway for the heart is this motivates me to repeat what's most important. We've all heard the phrase over and over and over, what gets repeated gets rewarded. What gets rewarded gets repeated. What gets repeated gets rewarded. What gets reinforced gets repeated in their behavior and the vocabulary. So you can learn whether it's getting through over time, not by the goosebumps they might feel during your lecture, but are they starting to do it? And isn't it encouraging when we hear stories of schools that might use Habitudes, for instance, and go, the students are actually doing it. They're doing community service projects. They're changing the way they view the hallways in the school or whatever.
Yeah.
It's really
You know, one way we always talk about it, again, when I give advice on curriculum, is I'll get some pushback that's, you know, our juniors and seniors don't seem really excited about doing this new program. And I always tell them, the juniors and seniors that are going to get really excited about doing that program are the ones that are currently sophomores and freshmen.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they're going to see the juniors and seniors do it, go, oh, that's cool. And by the time it comes around, all of a sudden they're interested. That's what we call a culture of leadership.
Yes.
That means you've done something that sort of, it almost continues itself, right?
Yeah.
And that's part of where this repetition thing comes in, is it becomes self-perpetuating.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, that's great. So you've talked about some of the reasons why this is important. I wonder if you could talk to us about how we actually do it.
Yeah.
How do you leverage this, particularly in your communication, but just in general?
Yeah.
How do you leverage the advantage of this neural pathway thing and actually learn to be enheartened by getting through to students?
So I think what I'd like to do is offer a bit of an agenda.
Please.
For anybody that's communicating with students, with the young. There's five elements I want you to consider here, but this is going to leverage everything we just talked about, but it's actual steps you can take to leverage.
And this is good for teacher, for coach, for parent, whomever it is.
Anybody that's talking to the young, it's got a lot of neural pathways to be developed, okay?
Yes.
All right, so number one, the first step is illumination. So that's the epiphany. If indeed we're having a conversation and we've thought through what might be the idea that's fresh and memorable, we need to find a creative way to provide the concept or the principle that they're going to find relevant to their life. So this might be doing something a little different than the norm that wasn't memorable, and we create this epiphany. I've talked before about Ole Miss. I was with them this year, and some of their coaches were taking their student athletes to the graveyard. That was an epiphany time, because who walks in a graveyard every day? Not many. But they had a great conversation about finding their why. Why are you alive? Why are you here? What are you doing? And why are you doing it? But a graveyard just is a context that makes it an epiphany rather than just a conversation.
It's great.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you on the spot on this, but I remember there's a story, and I think it's in one of your books, where there was a father whose daughter started dating a man that he was not excited about her dating. And when the father was talking with a friend about it, one of the things the friend said, I think is what he said, was that right now your daughter is finding a better story or a better journey through this relationship than she is in your family. And he made a really important and I think really courageous decision to create an epiphany.
That's exactly
in their family.
No doubt about it. That was a huge illustration of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
All right, so that's step one is illumination, and that's the epiphany. Step two is illustration, and this means you provide some examples in your conversation. So people need a point for their head and a picture for their heart. So now you provide them with stories or models of what this concept looks like in real life. This enables them to file the information away in a way that accelerates understanding. I like stories, and I'm way into I'm past midlife, Andrew. I don't know if you knew that, but this is not
I was
funny.
Not aware, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're radiant right now.
Yeah,
so,
thank you. I appreciate that. All right, so illumination is step one. Illustration is step two. Those are examples. Step three is conversation. I think after you've shared the concept and they had an epiphany and you've illustrated it, now you need to let them talk. We talked about this at our Habitudes Intensives, that there needs to be a point where you stop talking and they start talking. Mm. So you create an environment for them to interact with the idea, enabling the dendrites to fire in their brain, where they're deciding what they're going to embrace and what they're going to not embrace.
Mm-hmm.
And reject. So this is just necessary. Yep. I hope teachers, even though you've got a truckload of curriculum to get through and your lesson plan is loaded with information, we've got to stop talking ourselves and let them talk.
My talking periods with students are 90 seconds.
Wow.
And you will find, and they're little 90-second periods peppered throughout, but what you'll find is that's enough to get it started where they feel like I'm contributing,
that's
I'm getting a chance to upload my thoughts, those kinds of things.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right? Fourth step, is repetition. This is what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
I've been repeating the repetition point
you
here.
You have.
Yes.
If we haven't learned it, it's our own fault.
That's
at this
right.
point. The neural pathway is
I'm
formed.
Trying hard. I'm trying hard. Okay. So this is where you condition them with a certain way of thinking. So this doesn't need to be sensational. I mean, I love it if you are sensational. You're competing against YouTube right now. But just doing it over and over and over, knowing that repetition is what's going to make something stick. So it fosters memory, and I've already mentioned this whole repetition thing is why memory works, is because the pathways are created. And then the last step is practice. We have believed for many, many, many years that the only time you really learn something is when you get up and you do it.
Mm.
You experience it yourself. So students need to here's the phrase I always like to use. They need a point for their head, a picture for their heart, and a practice for their hands.
So good. Can you say that again?
Yeah.
I think it's good.
They need a point for their head. Here's the concept I want you to get. A picture for their heart. Here's a story of how it might look. And then a practice for their hands. Here's what you can do right now to experience this yourself.
And that's an important distinction. Right now, we want to give them something they could put into practice within the next week.
Yeah,
is typically
that's right.
how we approach
Not
it.
Not 5 years from now.
Exactly.
Yeah. So...
Yeah. That's so good. That's so good. So I want to read these five steps back because I think these are things, like we said, that can be done whether it's in the classroom, whether it's on the field as a coach, or you know, it's a routine that you need to do at night with your kids. This is really, really important. So the first step is illumination. You're creating epiphany in them, helping them realize that something's really important. They need to address it. You want to give them an illustration, so an example of what does this look like? How could it look? Mm-hmm. This is where you tell that story from your life or whatever it is. Conversation, so actually have interaction with them where they get to communicate back to you. Repetition, where you're conditioning them to see the same thing over and over again, and then actually give them a practice. How do they experience it for themselves? Maybe they can begin to participate as time goes on, whatever that might look like. But this is a great and very, honestly very simple way to get the power of this neuropathway idea and really take heart with what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to encourage listeners before we sign off here. You must have a situation right now, I'm guessing, because I do, that I'm just wondering, is my message even getting through? Mm. And I need to worry perhaps less about that. I might need to worry about it. Maybe I do need to be more engaging. But I think what I need to do is stay at it, stay at it, stay at it. Don't give up, don't give up, don't give up. Because that path on that road, that the weeds are getting carted, you know, and that now there's a place I know I'm supposed to walk, is getting developed right now.
That's great. That's great. Well, what a great message, Tim. Thank you so much for leading us through this conversation. If you are out there and you're wondering, how do I do this? How do I get started? One really great tool, obviously we believe in it here at Growing Leaders, is Habitudes. If Habitudes might be an interesting thing for you to do, maybe with your kids around the dinner table or in your classroom or with your team on the field, whatever it is, we have found for thousands, literally thousands and hundreds of thousands of people, that Habitudes has been a really great tool for them to utilize to begin to create some of these repeated conversations and help students develop especially life skills that are going to help them now and in the future. So if you're interested in finding out more about Habitudes, go to growingleaders.com/habitudes, and you can get it in book form. You can get it through Habitudes online in digital form. There's a lot of different ways that you'll be able to utilize Habitudes, so I strongly encourage you to at least look into that. And if you don't know where to get started, we always suggest start with Habitudes, the Art of Self-Leadership. It's the beginning of all leadership is self-leadership. So that's a great one, great set of conversations to have. As always, if you will rate this podcast, give us 5 stars, that helps us get the word out about what we're doing here on this podcast. Follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We love connecting with you guys there. And as always, if you have ideas for this podcast, questions you want us to answer, people you want us to interview, shoot us an email. It's podcast@growingleaders.com. We love to get those emails from you. Thanks so much for joining in. Thank you, Tim, for leading us through this awesome conversation, and we'll see you next time.